Hey, what is going on, everybody? This is the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast presented by Underdog Fantasy, coming to you live from the True North Fantasy Football Network for the second time. This is season two. This is episode 16. Big show today. Lots to get into. Don't want to sit here forever. I am, of course, your host with the most time on his hands. I am Thomas Tipple FF. Tomorrow marks my favorite event of the year, seeing how long my knees will last while playing Beer League Slow Pitch.
My name is Jacob Sanderson. You can find me on Twitter at FF_RTDB. And today is especially special for me because, as Tom only remembers, the first thread that I ever posted since joining Fantasy Twitter like 3 weeks in was just a compilation of every D'Ernest Johnson zone run against the Dallas Cowboys executing that sweet, sweet scheme.
Is it my turn now?
It's your turn. Yeah, you are the remaining person.
Okay. My name is Noah Hills. You can find me on Twitter at No More Parties. And my fun fact, I heard that Scott Barrett puked before the last show. So I thought of something adjacent to puking. And when I got my nose pierced, I passed out. Okay. And then when I got my stud replaced with a ring, I passed out and had a seizure. So that's my fun fact.
Oh my Lord. That's a fact. That's for sure. Look, we obviously have BV hanging out in the chat. We love to see that. 100%. Guys, we have an action-packed show full of non-stop running back action, I guess. So I want to
get it tonight.
We are going to establish it hard for all the RB truthers on the Bird app and elsewhere. Noah, you've been churning out articles at the pace of Chris Johnson's 40-yard dash. Tell us a bit about the metrics which go into your model and bay rating.
Yeah, so I pretty much exclusively focus on running backs. And I guess common misconception based on me calling it a model is that I have a model. I don't, actually. It's just I don't know what else to call it.
I thought it was the infallible running back model.
Yeah. I started using that like tongue in cheek in my articles because I don't know. Just what else am I going to say? But my process, I guess, really the goal is just to quantify as much as I possibly can and, you know, add as much context into these evaluations as I can. And so the rushing efficiency metrics are kind of what I've been hammering this offseason. Kind of, I guess, what people know me by at this point, even though that's not really completely what I'm all about. But at this point, it is what it is. But the rushing efficiency metrics, box-adjusted efficiency rating, basically that looks at, I like to compare, or I like to evaluate running back rushing performance by kind of contextualizing their efficiency with the efficiency of the other players who are like operating in the same offensive environment. Because, you know, running back performance is so dependent on, you know, the defenses that they're playing, the offensive line performance, play calling, surrounding talent, all of that stuff. And so comparing a running back on one team to another team is almost useless as far as efficiency goes. So I try to normalize that by comparing players to what the other running backs on the team are doing. And a box-adjusted efficiency rating takes it a step further and accounts for the defenders in the box that each player is seeing on their carries, uses a weighted average to create like a percentage that represents how much a player is either outperforming or underperforming the per carry output of the other guys in their team. So that's kind of like bird's eye view efficiency. And then the other main one I like to use is relative success rate, which kind of adjusts things in the same way using box counts and the weighted average. But instead of a per carry average, it looks at success rate, which describes whether or not a player succeeded, like given down and distance. And so there are a lot of these guys who, you know, have high per carry averages, but they only carry the ball on like third and nine and things like that. And that, you know, in 8 yards per carry there is great, but it's not actually helping their team. You know, it's kind of cheap yards. And so success rate is kind of the other half of the puzzle that tells you that those guys, you know, their efficiency is fraudulent or they're churning out positive yards despite not being overly efficient. That's kind of how I would describe it.
See, that sounds to me like something that people that like to, I don't know, use Tony Pollard only sees, you know, six in the box or whatever. He's not really that efficient inside. And I feel like that would actually be one of the reasons people would be able to separate Elliot and Pollard's production, something that I know Jacob goes to war for.
You can check out the Dallas Cowboys running back efficiency series, for instance.
So I feel like that's just something that Jacob's been fighting and arguing with for, I don't know, 2 years now.
Yeah, I like Pollard. I wish that Jerry did as much as I did, but I love Pollard. I believe in Pollard, I think, more than Noah does. I don't know if it's that you think he's... I know that you've been, like, mildly not as hot on Pollard as, like, a lot of, like, running back efficiency nerds. Is that more just because you don't think he's ever going to get the work, or do you think that he's not actually as good as a lot of other metrics show him to be?
I think maybe a combination. I think he's, like, a super dynamic player. He's fun. Like, he's fast. He's efficient in the role that he plays. He catches passes. Like, I think he's a good player. And if like Zeke ever went down, which, you know, for the sake of Pollard, we've been kind of holding out hope that that might happen at some point, like, you know, not for Zeke's sake.
Oh, it happened to me. I was going for my back-to-back championships in the San Francisco game. It happened.
Yeah, I always remind people that Tony Pollard has been the RB1 overall in 100% of weeks that Zeke has missed.
Yeah,
and there you go. Yeah,
cost me any championship.
Right, like any extended time, like any individual game or whatever that he would play, like with Zeke removed from the equation, I'm sure he would be like super effective, super productive, at least for fantasy purposes. I don't know that he's the kind of running back that an NFL coaching staff wants in that role. And at this point, like, we've been waiting for him for 2 or 3 years now. Like, as far as like dynasty investment goes, like, he's not super expensive, but we're kind of running out of time for him to, you know, kind of make good on whatever investment you've made.
Here's my question. I have many, but one is on related to this. Like, do you think that NFL coaches and stuff, like, do you think that that's how they deploy a lot of these backs? Do you think that they deploy them in a sense that's actually like rational? Because I think a lot of the stuff that I have, like how I look at running backs and how I've discuss running back, especially in the Bulletproof Discord, and even looking through a lot of your stuff, like a lot of the pushback that I always get whenever I'm like, yeah, this running back is like really ineffective, or this running back super effective, is like, yeah, it doesn't matter, you know, earning volume is the predominant skill. And at least, well, my answer has always been like, earning volume is what matters, essentially, from the standpoint of scoring fantasy points. Like, if I'm playing DFS, I only really care about the volume projection. If I'm playing redraft, I care a little bit more about talent. If I'm playing dynasty, I care a lot more about talent. Like, to what extent do you think that NFL coaches actually allocate volume in a way that's like sensible, rational, or predictable?
The predictable part, I don't know. That would be an interesting study. Way that's rational. That's a good question. I think I don't have a great understanding of like scheme from like a, you know, a game planning point of view, or from an individual like rush schemes point of view. And so I can't speak to whether or not, I guess I wouldn't say I can't speak to it. I would say I would trust what we're seeing from NFL coaches as far as like, we're running outside zone as a large part of our game plan. Like, and so running back X gets most of the carries, but I don't know if like outside zone from like a philosophical standpoint is the right play versus, right, you know, a more college style offense with, you know, spread concepts and stuff like that. So I don't, you know, from like a game planning point of view, I'm not sure, but from a, like, I guess I would assume and trust NFL coaches that given the schemes that they are choosing to run, most of the time, the guys who would be the best options in those cases are being deployed most often. But I also think there are probably a lot of politics that go into it, relationships, business factors. I mean, there's a reason that the guys who get drafted highly get the most opportunity. And it's not always because they're the best players. It's because the teams have invested in them. And so that's always going to be a situation. And so I guess for the most part, I would say yes, that the guys who get the most carries generally deserve them, but I don't think that's always the case.
Okay, well, let's talk about like a couple specific cases, and we'll dive into like sort of guys that you're recommending on buying or selling your stuff later. But like at like a macro level, take the case of someone like a DeAndre Swift as an example of a guy that I've talked about a lot this year, where Maybe you think differently, but I don't think so, because I remember reading your piece. Like, he was not an effective rusher of the football last year. Really good pass receiving back in a lot of ways, especially in terms of drawing volume. Early in the season, he was also a really efficient receiver, less so at the end of the season. Like, how do you approach these guys from, like, a dynasty perspective or even a redraft perspective? It's like, does it worry you at all when you have these guys that there's these warning signs that it's like, this guy actually wasn't really all that effective or efficient? Or are you on the camp of, yeah, well, that's cool, I guess, but not necessarily going to be as actionable?
Yeah, I think it's very situational, but I do care quite a bit about how effective a guy was on a per touch basis, even if he's getting volume. For Swift specifically, I think he was effective enough in fantasy that, given the improvement in, like, the offensive situation, even if he himself doesn't play better, like, he should return value at where he's being drafted for the most part. But yeah, on just kind of in a general sense about guys like that, I care very much. Like David Montgomery last year had probably his least effective season, right, from, like, a per touch standpoint. And because of that, like, you know, he's going to be, what, 25 this year. Like, he's still in his prime as far as, like, what we would understand an age curve to be for a running back. But given that signal I'm seeing from,
you know, he's going to be
given the signal that I'm seeing from his, like, a dip in per touch efficiency, I'm not as interested in David Montgomery as I would have been if he had just kind of, like, maintained his performance. Like, that's just not a good sign. So.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Have you seen, like, a directionality to this where, like, a wide receiver, for instance, Adam Harstad has, like, this fantastic analogy that I've put on the show before, where it's like, essentially the wide receiver aging curve is a lie. It looks like a curve because every year, like, gradually more wide receivers are falling off the cliff. And so you have, like, this, 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 and then if you layer it all, it looks like a curve, but actually it's just a lot of people producing at the same rate and then not producing at all anymore. The difference, of course, is, like, in wide receiver, and one of the reasons why I always talk about volume very differently from wide receiver running back is, of course, like, wide receivers are deployed essentially against each other, and there's a skill level in earning that target as opposed to other receivers. For running back, like, yeah, if a coach just decides to play you, you could be, like, abjectly terrible. You'll still return some level of fantasy value just by virtue of getting the touches. Do you notice with running backs, like, that there is a sort of a clear canary in the coal mine where you're looking at this skill atrophy on a certain player, and the next thing you know, like, it's out to the glue factory? Or are you commonly seeing running backs fluctuate? You guys enjoyed the canary or what?
Yeah, I wish I knew what that idiom meant. Is that, like, a Canadian thing?
Is this a Canadian thing? Okay, so the canary in the coal mine comes from, like, if there was a fear that there might be some sort of toxic gas in a mine, that it would kill a canary a lot faster than it would infect a human. So miners would put a canary into the mine, and then they would check, and if the canary was still alive in 15 minutes, then they would know that it was safe. And if the canary was dead, then they would know that they were about to die, and they'd all leave the mine. So they would have a canary with them in the coal mine who would die before they would if there was any toxins.
Mm. So the idiom is that it's, like, a clear signal of something to come.
So, right, for example, the Alvin canary in the coal mine would be the fact that he just was not as efficient or effective as a rusher of the football last year as he's been previously. Is this a sign that, like, assuming he avoids a jail sentence, that, like, he might not, you know, things might be going downhill fast? Like, is there sort of, because my presumption has been at running back that there's some sort of lagging indicator where, like, a running back might show you. Derrick Henry is a great example of this. Derrick Henry's been an efficient, effective superstar of a running back for most of his career. Last year, he wasn't really that, if you dig underneath the hood, but they kept giving him the ball anyways. Would our expectation then be that, like, sort of in the future, if he continues to not be as efficient, that's where they sort of give you a little teaser where you can see stuff in the efficiency first of, like, this guy's not quite the same, but there's probably going to be a period where they're still getting played for a while, and then you fall off after that?
Yeah, I wish I had so the data that I'm working with right now that I've kind of had my hands on for a while, like the last few months, but for the NFL, at least, only goes back to 2016. So I don't have, like, a large, like, historical base to work with here. And I haven't, like, done these sorts of tests, but running back performance does fluctuate quite a bit. And so I would assume, like, the R squared of, you know, year performance and then year N plus one isn't super strong, but I do think there are general trends, like, player X is a good player for several years and then has a down year, if there aren't other things to point to, like a change in situation, or because I'm using like team relative efficiency metrics, if Jamal Charles had joined, you know, Derrick Henry in Tennessee last year, and now it suddenly looks like Derrick Henry is bad relative to his teammates, it's like, okay, we'll prime Jamal
Charles.
They have
Charles Jamal Charles at home, and his name is Dontrell Hilliard, but anyway.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. but like, there aren't those, for like Derrick Henry specifically, like I don't know that there are those situational factors. Like, he got hurt and stopped playing. It's not like he was playing through extensive injury, and so I'm taking that as a sign that we should be prepared for a complete like fall off for Derrick Henry.
I also just tweeted out, have you ever heard of the phrase canary in the coal mine? Yes, no, it's a Canadian thing. I'll report back on the results.
Okay.
Love that. I know, one of the things, being someone that I originally have come from this quote unquote film grinding, if you would, background, as someone who was an offensive coordinator, and I played for quite a while. We always looked at it as he's just not that efficient. He's just not getting the breaks right now. And it seems like NFL coaching might finally be turning a corner and trying to hammer home a square piece into a round hole and just continuously overloading it with the shifts of committee backs. How does your data help you kind of sift through the committee back conundrum to give you an edge?
Okay. I'm not exactly sure what you mean. I'll give you a takeaway that I've noticed as it pertains to committee backs, and you tell me if I've answered the question or not. One thing that I've noticed, just kind of working through this data, I haven't like run extensive tests or whatever, just sort of anecdotally as I've thought about this and worked my way through it, is that doing the research and the analysis that I'm doing now has made me much more appreciative and like understanding, I think, of what NFL coaches are doing. Where like somebody like Brian Robinson, earlier this offseason, before I had stumbled upon and created these like box count adjusted metrics, I saw him as a guy that was just like inefficient, old. And I was like, why would anybody be interested in this guy? Like, he's obviously a bad running back prospect. Like, why are people excited about him? And then kind of diving into this, it was like, okay, he's not efficient relative to his teammates overall, but like his success rate is very high. And I think like Zamir White is the same way. And like Zamir White specifically is very good, or was very effective in college against like 8 and 9 man boxes, despite lagging behind his teammates in all the lighter box counts. And so he has utility as a short yardage back. Like Brian Robinson has utility as a guy that's just going to like, as NFL coaches say, like, you know, if this has value or not is a different discussion, but like, stay on schedule and, you know, stay ahead of the chains and things like that. And then there's other guys who are really good against like 5 and 6 man boxes and then are ineffective against the heavier boxes. And while that might make their efficiency look bad or good, you know, depending on the situation, I see the utility in that from these players that have like, you know, archetypes and small roles that they do well, instead of having like the full package. And I think there's obviously value in having a guy who can do the full package, especially from an unpredictability standpoint. But in the absence of that, I do see a lot of the value in these committee role filler types.
Okay. No, that's dope. I love it.
Well, we had that conversation just a little bit on Twitter about my competent plotter term that I've been using, and it's pretty much Brian Robinson. Like, if I was to just like make the poster boy for who I envision as the competent plotter, it's Brian Robinson. Where like, I mean, people hate the term plotter, but I don't like actually mean it all that pejoratively. What I think of is like, it's a guy who has like base competency in multiple aspects of the game, and is generally like, I've seen these quadrant graphs a lot of people put out, which will either be like force missed tackles versus yards after contact. So essentially, how often are you making a guy miss versus how many yards are you creating after you make someone miss? Or, you know, your success rate, so how often you're making successful plays versus your breakaway run rate, so how often you're making breakaway, like 20 plus yard plays. And when I think of these like competent plotters, it's the guys who are probably forcing more missed tackles, not necessarily getting a ton of yards after contact, churning out positive yardage, not necessarily churning out a bunch of 20 plus yard runs, and not dynamic in the passing game necessarily, but have like a base level of competency in the passing game. But basically, my working theory is that that's just the best possible use of the third round rookie pick is getting this archetype of player. And I think that's like some of the value in a lot of the stuff that I've read of yours in terms of like getting a handle on the descriptive. Like Keontae Ingram is a guy that I've been drafting tons of this year that I really like. Oh, wow. Did I just say that like exactly as Maddie posted in the chat?
You did. That's why I put it up.
Actually, I didn't know. That's actually really strange that that happened at the identical time. I'm kind of spooked.
Okay, it's just anyway. Like I mentioned that Jerry Jeudy, all of a sudden Lucas will pop up in the chat almost seemingly at the same time.
Yeah, that was Beetlejuice. Anyway, Ingram, I'll quote directly from you. I think you had him. What was it? He had like, was it a 97th percentile success rate or something?
This last season, yeah. I think so.
Like, so to me, that's a guy who's like, who's going to get what's blocked essentially at a really high rate. And to me, that's fine, especially like in Arizona, like where we've seen them like really gravitate towards these Kenyon Drake, James Conner types inside, you know, deferring guy like a Chase Edmonds, who's very much like a breakaway guy. And I guess what I'm looking for in these third round backs, like I think Khalil Herbert was a great example of like what you love to get in a late round running back, where most of these guys have to have some good fortune go their way, right? Like if you're drafting a Brian Robinson, a Keontae Ingram, your boy Isaiah Spiller, your favorite running back in the NFL, any of these guys, like they're going to probably need someone to get injured ahead of them, or they're going to need, I don't know, someone to get suspended or just like be bad in practice or something to get a good look. And then what I'm always looking for is like, what's the obvious reason this guy has to get taken off the field? Because we've seen these guys like a Kenny Gainwell, for example, Miles Sanders gets injured repeatedly. There's no other good running backs in Philly, really. It's like Boston Scott, Jordan Howard, whatever. Like these guys aren't all that imposing. And still, they have that game against the Lions. Everyone played Kenny Gainwell in DFS that week. And what happens? Like Kenny Gainwell remains a satellite back because they decide they don't want to play him in that role. Whereas Khalil Herbert goes out there, you know, Montgomery gets injured. Damian Williams gets COVID. And what happens? Khalil Herbert's like, okay, well, I guess you're playing 100% of snaps because it's not just like an obvious reason to take you off the field. And I love targeting those guys where like if things break their way, like they're just going to be RB1s for however many weeks that you can ride it.
Do you guys hear this weed whacker?
Yeah, we do.
Okay, sick. Happening? This is perfect timing. The yard guy showed up right now.
Love it. It's very intermittent. It's like on occasion.
He's taking laps. So hopefully it doesn't go on forever. But yeah, I agree with you. And I that's another thing that I've kind of noticed in doing this analysis and this research lately is I kind of like to like ground my takes in like I create these like composite scores, like spit out a number like represents how good a guy is overall. And generally that the premium things there are like size, production, pass catching ability, things like that, efficiency sprinkled in, and then like some athleticism. But there are lots of guys who don't fit like that particular soup who are very, you know, valued by NFL teams and will end up being good in fantasy. Like Snoop Connor is a guy sort of like this, or like Tyrion Davis Price doesn't really catch passes. He's okay. You know, he's an okay athlete. He's fast, but he's not like particularly anything else. He wasn't that productive. He's not that good of a pass catcher, but like he allegedly pass blocks well and he gets what's blocked. And so he's a guy that like, isn't a, you know, a good prospect, so to speak, but he's going to be an effective NFL player when he gets on the field probably. And so he's one of these guys that you're talking about. That's like a competent plotter.
He's in my bangers no mash category. I just picked fun names because I'm like, we all have the, I'm like everybody, I look at these spreadsheets and it's like satellite, satellite plus, satellite minus. Like, I'm like, these are boring. I'll have all these fun names instead. So, I have the competent plotters. I have my bangers no mash is the people that are basically the competent plotters, but without any pass catching evidence, like of existence whatsoever, which is Tyrion Davis Price to me. And Zeus White is in that category too.
Zeus White, very good. I actually was going to talk about Snoop Connor a little bit later. He actually fits that mold with walk-on opportunity. I think the only other person on that roster that I can recall offhand is Ryquell Armstead and his seemingly... And
Carlos Hyde has been re-signed.
Oh, okay, I didn't see that. I don't like that. Shit. I was going to say...
Come on, a competent plotter. Carlos Hyde.
His
no longer confident. I think he's now an incompetent plotter. But once upon a time, he was a confident plotter.
His former college coach is no longer there to feed him the ball. So, you know, I like Snoop Connor. And that's actually one thing when you look at these late round guys that you're hoping you're going to hit, you kind of want to see a pathway for opportunity, which actually leads me to there being a lot of talk in the fantasy community about chasing volume or chasing efficiency. We know within one set game, the number one driver of fantasy production at RB is volume. But what do you see as the best uses of your work in fantasy directly?
Yeah, I actually tweeted about this today. Like a frustration that I see as like a response to the work that I'm doing is efficiency doesn't matter in fantasy football. Like volume is king. So like, what is this? What does it matter that Isaiah Spiller is not efficient, or like, who cares that whatever sleeper running back is super efficient? He didn't get drafted highly, so he's not going to get volume. When like, that's not the point. I'm not pumping out articles about player volume or player efficiency because I think it has some sort of R squared value to fantasy points. Like the utility of Jesus, the utility of efficiency based analysis is player evaluation. Like that's really what I'm doing. I'm just kind of interested in fantasy football because that's a utility for the analysis that I'm doing. But I'm very sorry about this.
No, do your thing.
It's fine. I really enjoyed it. It's kind of ominous.
Good. Nice vibe. Yeah, it's a nice ambiance. Okay, good. But yeah, I think really what it is we care, especially in, you know, like redraft more than DFS and dynasty more than redraft and Devy even more than that. We care about how good these players are, and pretending that that doesn't matter, even if it's on a very small sample, is irresponsible. I think, like, yes, Tony Pollard or bad example. Let's say Deion Jackson is Jonathan Taylor's handcuff and Jonathan Taylor goes down. And so it's the Deion Jackson show for 2 weeks. He's going to be an RB2 in fantasy. He might be an RB1 and you have to have him in your lineup and you should play him in DFS, but like, you're not going to have, he shouldn't carry the same performance expectations as Jonathan Taylor, because Jonathan Taylor is a better player, as evidenced by his history of efficient play and productive play. And so understanding how good these players are as well as possible, as like comprehensively as possible, is important, especially in making like smart decisions in Devy drafts and rookie drafts. And even in redraft, like so often we see these guys like Alex Collins and Thomas Rawls and Isaiah Crowell and Raheem Mostert. And like, it just goes on and on. Like these dudes who flash for a season and then are apparently their team's RB1 going into the next year, get drafted in the third, fourth, fifth rounds in redraft leagues. And it almost never works out for those guys because they're not very good, as evidenced by their history of a lack of efficiency and a lack of production. Like, we should care about how talented players are and how well they've played in proving their talent in the past.
I agree with you massively. Okay. Oh, go ahead, Tom.
I was just going to say, I think there's only one team that breaks that rule, and it's whoever the New Orleans Saints number two running back is. Seems to be whoever the New Orleans Saints number two running back is, the second they get to play because they injure, you just lock them in as an RB1.
Or the 49ers.
Yeah, 49ers as well.
Yeah, whoever they plug in is going to run for 6 yards a carry for however long they stay healthy.
Yeah. I remember there was, I think it was 2 years ago. I could be wrong, but it was like, I think there was, I honestly can't even remember the stat. I can't remember if it was RYOE or there was like some next gen stats thing that showed like, here's the most effective running backs or whatever. And I remember it was just like J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, Jeff Wilson, Raheem Mostert, like all these teams were playing in this, like in these certain skews. It was hilarious. But I agree with you. So honestly, like the day that I invited you to come on the show, actually, it's kind of a funny story. I was in this like heated argument in the Bulletproof Discord where I can't even remember what tweet of yours got shared, but one of them. And then we were like, okay, what is like, so I'll honestly, like most of my fights in our Discord, and Tom can attest, like comes down to like consistent fights over like running backs and specifically running back talent and like my takes on like running backs that I think are really shitty. Basically, like I feel like my whole like quote unquote like thing came from like last year where I wrote this article. I was like, Zeke really sucks and like there's no need to draft him in the first round because this guy's bad. And then like that's obviously not the only player that I have takes on, but it just sort of became this analog for like a lot of analysis I was trying to do with like Pollard or Dylan, or ended up being Khalil Herbert anyway. And honestly, a lot of the reason why I've been doing this stuff for years is because I play DFS. Like DFS, my number one thing, even over Dynasty. And I always try to look at like, okay, when we look at this free square running back, like, A, is this running back good? And what can they do? Like, is this a running back that's going to stay on the field in the 2 minute drill? Because if they are, then I can't really fade this $4,800 Alex Madison if he's going to like play 80% of the snaps. But like, if he's a guy who's, you know, if he's a guy who's not going to ever play on third downs, he's a guy who's never going to play in the 2 minute drill, well, then all he needs to do is get game scripted out. And like, that's a guy that I want to have in none of my lineups in DFS if he's going to be 30% owned, you know? So like, I've been doing that stuff for years. And in Dynasty, I think it comes to fruition, especially with, yeah, like, which depth running backs do we target, right? Like, are we just spinning a wheel on backup running backs? Or are we looking at guys that have, like, an ability to stay on the field? Or are we looking at guys that, you know, are trying to do satellite? I think it matters a lot. I think it matters with at the high level. Like, you know, we have options, right? We have a lot of different guys at the same sort of base projection that are all within, like, a margin of error. So to me, it's like, why wouldn't we target the ones who are good, you know, if it's not priced in? And in some instances, like a Leonard Fournette is an example where, like, I don't think Leonard Fournette's very good, but I think that it's been like really priced in that he's not very good for like a number of years, right? And I think that's like a bit of a different case versus, you know, some guys. And yeah, anyway, we ended up having this big argument where basically your thing got shared. We were like, okay, you know, what is the point of this in terms of for fantasy? And I sort of have two arguments. It's like, one, I think it has marginal utility, like in a lot of edges that in ways like that. And then two, it's just like, also kind of, isn't it interesting to just like look at running backs and see like who's doing things effectively? And I think for some people, it's like not interesting, quite honestly. Yeah. But to me, it is very interesting. So I was just curious for your answer, because I was like very curious to see like, what do you see as the biggest like application to fantasy? And do you consider yourself like a fantasy analyst or a running back performance analyst?
Yeah, that's something the kind of conflict between what I'm doing is really just player evaluation, and then my content is released on fantasy football platforms, is kind of like butting heads against each other, because I don't consume any fantasy football content. I'm not even currently in any dynasty leagues. I play in one home redraft league.
Wow.
So I'm not even really that interested in fantasy football.
They do
football.
Have Dynasty in Idaho, right?
It's reached. They do, Idaho. Yeah. And I've played Dynasty before. I just, I don't know, left the leagues I was in after a few years. I just got, I don't know, I was over it. But
interesting.
Yeah. I'm just not. That's not exactly the space that I want to be in. But there is this kind of conflict between. I guess I'm kind of getting off topic here, but like I would like to transition to being more just like evaluating players. But a lot of what I'm, I had a thought and I lost it. What was it? Okay. So like what is the utility here? And I think a lot of people see at any sort of like data being shared is going to be consumed by people who care about the application of data in fantasy football. And those people very often are just looking for like a skeleton key, or like, how does this fit into a model that spits out like an R squared of like fantasy points and rankings? And specifically in running back evaluation, almost nobody who's doing data-based running back evaluations is even talking at all about how good players are at running the ball. Like I honestly can't, other than Graham Barfield and like Pro Football Focus, who are doing on-field charting, which is really just a form of, you know, quantified film study. All of the people doing, there's some like rushing yards over expected models being built by like the guys at Campus to Canton, but really it's like speed score, dominator rating, target share, and draft capital, and nothing to do with how good these players are on the field, touching the ball, running between the tackles. And so that's what I want to know is like, you know, you could sort these guys by speed score and dominator rating and probably get a pretty good idea of how good they are. But we've learned nothing about who actually is good at carrying the ball. And so that's what I want to know, because that's where 80% of what these guys are doing on the field comes down to. And nobody seems interested in that other than film analysts. And so I think what I'm doing with data gets a lot of pushback because I don't have R squared values to share, and they probably wouldn't be good even if I did have them. And so people are like, why should we care about this? When if it was Benjamin Solak talking about, you know, Breece Hall being really good. Like, everybody's like, oh yeah, that matters. And I don't know. I'm going off on a tangent here, but no. I think that's a difficulty that I've run into.
Sorry, Jacob.
No, please.
I find it relevant because even when I'm sitting here trying to do rankings, right? I'm sitting there and I'm looking and I'm trying to go through my running back rankings. I'm like, okay, rushing yard, like you said, expected rushing yards and how many fantasy points per game? What was their speed score in college 5 years later? And all these things on the field. And there is no real – and then, of course, aside from trying to do that, you have the Twitter arguments of, well, Nick Chubb's the best pure runner in the NFL. He'd be the number one overall running back in the NFL. I can't apply that argument to my rankings right now because there's almost nothing available to you aside from maybe a Pro Football Focus – rushing score, right? And that's really the one thing I've had to fall back on. So trying to dive into how efficient running backs are and applying that into rankings is something I have been trying to do for the last 3 or 4 weeks, especially after listening to Jacob defend in arms in the Bulletproof Discord. It's something I'm trying to do. But I think if people were a little more accepting to it, I think it would come around and help a lot more people be able to find maybe a little bit more of an edge rather than, like you said, looking at speed scores and athletic scores and fantasy points per game and burst score. And
yeah, and I think all of those things.
Oh, go for
it. Go ahead. Okay, I think – and I'm not denying that those things have value either. Like – sorting right. by dominator rating or, you know, finding the guys who hit market share thresholds. Like those are things that I do as well. And speed score has proven to be like a relatively predictive metric for running backs, and draft capital also, you know, is predictive. But like my number one goal is learning about players, understanding the way that they play on the field. And so these things have utility, but they like, the guys with the best speed scores, even if they have the highest R squared to fantasy points or whatever, you're just missing so much. Like, yes, big is good, fast is good, got it. But not everybody who's big and fast is good at football. So I don't know. There's a lot we're missing there if those are the only things we're looking at. So I think there's a lot of utility to paying attention to how good players are as football players, which seems so obvious to say, but it seems to get missed.
I was just going to say, I just think that running games are fascinating. And like, I'm not Tom. I didn't coach football. I didn't play football. I'm very lanky. My mom said that I could play every other sport. She took football off the table. Mark. Just from like a tactical perspective, right? Like one thing that's always fascinated me is that the best and most effective running games are often very specialized. And we look at running games like the Patriots. We look at running games like the Ravens, we look at running backs like the San Francisco 49ers. And what's really interesting to me over the last few years is that they have like very specialized players who run very unique schemes, and they have multiple players within those schemes who get deployed within certain ways. And funny enough, whenever you look at any sort of descriptive metric of like who's, you know, being the most effective, like constantly these backfields kind of end up near the top of the charts. And to me, it's like, that tells me a lot about the teams who perseverate the most over who is being deployed in which way are seemingly getting very beneficial results. And so, you know, what I wonder is like, how do we, like, shouldn't we care about that? Because we know that teams run very different systems. You know, we know that there's teams that run, that are going to run outside more than inside. We know that there's teams that are going to run power versus run zone. We know that there's teams that are going to run different packages and use running backs in different packages. We had this, you know, discussion about Gus Edwards in the Discord the other day. It's like, is Gus Edwards like a really good running back? And my take is like, well, that entirely depends on like what scheme you want to run. Like in the context of a downhill running scheme that's going to give him like a runway and it's going to have a bunch of motion going sideways where he just has to like cut downhill and be big and fast and do it. Like he's one of the best you could possibly have. And like, we've shown that he's very descriptive. Do I think he would be like able to do a whole lot more than what he does? No, not really. I think he's like in the perfect role to be like Gus Edwards. But yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I guess what I find is that it's especially in like the rookie draft process, so many of these backs are so different. And in ways that like aren't captured by just looking at their raw stats or their raw efficiency, like in terms of how they are actually able to win. And yeah, you're right. Like film people care a lot. And I just think like the numbers are available, right? Like we can look at like, on which types of plays these running backs are most effective, against which fronts they're most effective. Are they creating a lot of their efficiency through breakaway runs? Are they creating a lot of efficiency through, successful shorter runs? Like that information is available to us. And I think that we can proxy a lot of what film people can do quite effectively if we actually want to. And I just think it's interesting that nobody really wants to, because I actually do think that there is value in it, and I appreciate it. And obviously that's why we had on the show. But we do have some more questions that are fantasy related. And look, you don't lie to me. I read all your running back efficiency articles. You give out, I would sell this player, I would buy this player, dynasty advice. So I know that you can, I know you can put on your fantasy hat.
That is true. That's true.
One thing I just wanted to add, something I've been trying to find time to pitch to Jacob and get his opinions on, and might as well do it now. When we're ranking, let's say, running backs in tiers, one thing I've been trying to hammer out, and I don't know how much value it's going to have, once I get through the top 24, I kind of just stop ranking like running backs in general. Like I don't rank from 24 to like 36. What I've done is I've compiled a list of the handcuffs or backups to potential starters and put them in just a flat tier of their own, and am starting to look at, sure, going through all their athletic scores, their college production, maybe their dump, all their metrics that we have, and am definitely going to be now trying to add some efficiency into that to kind of give an edge maybe to who's next, actually next man up, and who can actually help you.
Well, you know what's interesting, Tom, is that almost the same thing as I was saying about how NFL teams are looking at running backs for certain roles. Like I tend to draft a high percentage of a portfolio in best ball tournaments and redraft leagues being zero RB or hero RB. Right. And what that leads me to do is like really try to look at these quote unquote bad running backs in like a very, in a way in terms of like what role do they function on my team? And it's kind of like a similar way to what an NFL team would do, just very differently, where, yeah, like when I tier out my ranks, I'm not tiering them by number. I'm tiering them by like, what do I need? Okay, so a guy like a Gus Edwards last year and a Nyheim Hines have absolutely nothing in common, but in the context of building out a zero RB best ball team, they kind of do the same thing in the sense that right. They have like a defined skill set and that they'll produce some points for me and have usable weeks early on without necessarily a ton of ceiling, versus a guy like Alexander Mattison, who basically every week he's either going to be an RB1 when Cook is out, or he's going to be completely useless when Cook plays, right? It's very different like use cases for all these running backs. And honestly, like playing zero RB in these like best ball tournaments and trying to figure out like these different handcuffs to draft is honestly like, kind of how I got into the mix with all these running back stats and stuff. Noah, rookie running backs. People are still doing rookie drafts. I have like three going at all times. You went through, you ranked all your rookie running backs. I believe you ranked Isaiah Spiller at RB69. Who are the guys you think are being drafted far too high in rookie drafts just for their cost? You can go with any tier you want. You can go at Breece Hall, you can go at Kenneth Walker, you can go at Isaiah Spiller, you can go at Zaquandre White if that's really what blows your boat. Who do you think is getting drafted far too highly?
Yeah, I this is not one of my answers, but I am a proponent of trading out of the 101 because I think people are out over
Me
their
too.
Skins a little
I'm
bit
one of
on
the
how
rare ones.
Yeah, people are.
Yeah,
I think Breece Hall is great. I don't think he's quite as good as everybody thinks he is, and so if you can pivot out and get like Joe Mixon plus or you know something like that or a couple 2023 firsts, like I'm definitely doing that. So. That's where I'd start. But then Kenneth Walker, I made a video about him like a week ago. I think he's going slightly too early. I think he's moved back a little bit, sort of as people have, you know, kind of left the hype about the second round behind and like taken a step back and thought about the Seattle situation a little bit. But he's going a little bit too high. I would probably wait to take him until after Hall and the big three wide receivers are gone. And then like James Cook at the 112, 201 as the RB3, I am out at that price. Like I recognize
Rashad White or James Cook straight up.
Rashad White.
Yes. You're on my side. Yeah. Of this. All right.
Yeah. Isaiah Spiller, I think, is still going too high.
He's the Malik Willis of running backs. It's because everybody thought he was going to go higher, and then he went lower, and so people are still drafting him like he went like in a round that he didn't go in.
Yeah, yeah, and right, like the 205, the RB6, like we, I don't know, he fell to day three to a team that has an established like RB1, who probably needs to be supplemented by somebody who fits the sort of role that Spiller seems to fit, but like he's not the starting running back for the Chargers, and so. I don't know. The 205 is a little rich for me. And then the other guy who you can barely say that he's being drafted too high, but it's Kyren Williams at, you know, the early fourth round, which in the early fourth round, take whatever shots you want.
That much.
Really.
I've taken him in the early fourth because I don't
But like what we had all collectively come to an understanding that like Kyren Williams is not good. Like he wasn't efficient in college. He came in way too small at the combine. He was incredibly slow. And then like everybody's in on Cam Akers. Daryl Henderson is an incredible handcuff. And then like, what's Kyren Williams going to be in Los Angeles? Like,
I'll take him early fourth because Rams back. That's literally it.
Sure. Sure. There's guys going after him. Like Keontae Ingram goes after him generally. Okay. Like
I would never take Kyren ahead of Keontae, but I draft like a million Keontae Ingram.
Right. I just think, what are we doing hoping for something from a satellite back on a team with two way better running backs ahead of him who we collectively decided was bad? I don't know. I'm just not seeing it.
Would you take, so, okay, here's, let's go through like the tiers. So obviously we all agree that Breece Hall is the RB1, even if we aren't necessarily like, and we agree that he's the 101, even if we would trade out of the 101, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. So I've been team trade out of the 101 if you can, but I certainly, if I'm at the 101 and nobody's trading with me, I'm taking Breece Hall.
Yeah, certainly not a bad pick if you end up having to make it, you know, like he's going to be good.
Kenneth Walker, I agree, is the RB2. I'm not a big fan of Kenneth Walker, mostly because my thoughts on Walker are that, not denying anything that he did in 2021, it was exemplary, it was incredible as a pure rusher. I think we've all talked through the pass catching thing on our various channels by now. My fear is that, like, I don't think his Wake Forest, like I went and ground through all of his numbers on Wake Forest, his EPA per play, his yards per carry versus his teammates, his rush yards over expected from the campus to campus models. Like he was getting outproduced by Christian Beale Smith at Wake Forest for 2 years. And so I guess my issue with Walker is, like, to me, the bet only works if he's actually an elite pure rusher. And I just don't necessarily have like 100% confidence that he is, because it was kind of only 1 year of it. But I agree with you. I have Walker 1.5. Where are we at on Walker? Is 1.5 or even lower?
Yeah, in a single QB league, that would be the first pick I would take him with. And in a super flex, it would be between him and Kenny Pickett, 105 and 106. But
I don't think I. Yeah, I said it wasn't that long ago that basically this year the Superflex draft is just a one QB draft. It's kind of how I'm treating it anyway, and maybe that'll work against me, or maybe all those times I've let other co-hosts of the Full Tilt, Billy Draft Pickett, is going to come back and bite me. We have Jeremy Clark here in the chat asking a question. Should TDP be going higher than he
is? This is the fun tier. This is what I wanted to talk about. So, yeah, we can kick it off with TDP because we have this next tier, Jeremy. So we talked about White and Cook a little bit. Those go in either order. And then we have the tier where it goes in some order. Damian Pierce, Isaiah Spiller, Tyler Algier, Tyrion Davis Price, Brian Robinson, Zamir White,
Hassan Haskins.
Yeah, sometimes
he's in that 11 right now.
Yeah, sometimes Keanu Ingram. Who's your guy like of this tier, and should TDP be going higher, or who is your favorite of this collection of backs?
Was Damian Pierce part of that?
Yeah,
he was, right. Yeah, Damian Pierce for sure. He's my RB3.
Yes, I like Pierce too. Nobody else likes Pierce.
Yeah, he's another one that I don't really understand.
Tom likes Pierce too.
I do. I was big Pierce. I got big pushback too, even on this year program prior to the draft.
Yeah, he's great. And I think early on, everybody was kind of, at least the data people were like, this guy's a joke. The film people were all in. And then all the data people kind of came around and concluded that he was, you know, probably one of the best running backs in this class who was just underutilized in college. And then he falls a little bit in the draft and everybody's like, fourth round rookie, who cares? It's like I don't know. The NFL should inform our evaluations to some extent, but like if you thought he was one of the best players in the class at the position the day before the draft, him falling to the fourth round doesn't mean he's bad now. And he's on a depth chart that is like incredibly ascendable. The single most ascendable depth chart in the entire league. He's got a 3-down skill set. The team's not going to be good, but like he's probably going to be the starting running back in Houston.
Right. I just want to point out one of the reasons you just stated that people should be in on Pierce is the same reason I think people are still so high on Spiller, because you thought he was X good prior to the draft. Then he goes in the third round. So I think people are having a hard time, you know, letting go of maybe Spiller when looking at a guy at Pierce who didn't hit, you know, most people's pre-draft evals still go around higher. There's just that one difference. It's like Rex Burkhead and David Johnson or Austin Eckler in front of you. I just wanted to point out that we talked about Spiller before, and then kind of the same problem pops up even with Pierce. So I just thought it'd be interesting to touch on that.
Well, interesting thing with the Spiller thing is that like people have been talking about this back that's the compliment to Eckler for years. That role sucks. It's never been good. Josh Kelly was in that role. He sucked. The role sucked. Larry Roundtree got a little bit of run. He sucked. The role sucked. The only role that's actually ever been good is Justin Jackson as the handcuff to the Eckler role when Eckler's out and he gets to catch all the passes. Even when Eckler was out and it was Justin Jackson and Josh Kelly splitting touches with them having like a more even distribution of carries with Jackson doing the Eckler pass catching stuff, Jackson was the guy you wanted to start. Like the big back role in LA sucks. It's a bad role. Like you're spinning a die hoping for a touchdown so you can get 9 fantasy points. Otherwise, it's terrible.
I agree.
This is like I hate this. Like anyway.
I agree. That's why I wanted to point it out though, because some things we were saying used to prop up Dameon Pierce, we use to kind of slight Spiller. So I just thought that was very interesting to me.
Yeah. And I think I do see your point there. I guess maybe this is arrogant. I don't know. My
be arrogant.
The difference that I see in these situations is like, I think I've been right about Isaiah Spiller all along, and him falling to day 3 was just like confirmation of that almost. Mm-hmm. And everybody else just like needs to get on board. Like he's not as good as you thought he was.
I agree.
And I also think Dameon Pierce is really good, but I don't know that anybody expected him to get drafted as like the RB1 or the RB2 like they did with Spiller. And so he shouldn't have fallen nearly as far in our like post-draft adjustments as a guy like Spiller. For me, I had to move him up after the draft because I had him at RB16 pre-draft. He was, you know, when he goes in the fourth round to a good team, now he's my RB9. And so where everybody else is dropping him from RB3 to RB6, I had to move him up. And so with Dameon Pierce, he's still one of the 3 best running backs in the class to me, and he's got opportunity. I'm keeping him where I have him.
Like about Pierce is like what I think is fascinating is I think it's interesting like when the community tends to like live by certain narratives or divorce them. Like we have seen now for several years that if there's one thing we can usually rely on, it's that the running back who goes round 3 or round 4 to a wide open depth chart is a lock to be egregiously overdrafted, usually. Like Keyshawn Vaughn, we had, you know, a lesser extent, Zach Moss. We had Trey Sermon and Michael Carter last year. The 2021 class was awesome, and it was foreseeably awesome, right? And yet, Trey Sermon and Michael Carter were often going in the back end of the first or the early second ahead of wide receiver prospects like Elijah Moore, Terrace Marshall, Rondale Moore. Obviously, one of those really worked out, 2 of those not as much. But better prospects than the caliber of prospects that we're seeing in the mid to late 2 this year. And then fascinatingly, Dameon Pierce, like I assumed when he went to the Texans, I was like, oh, this guy's going to be like a fringe first round pick. And then people are like, no, this time we're not doing it. I think he's better than those guys. Like, right. So my concern with Pierce that he hasn't had the workload, but like the reason why I'm pretty not like out, because I think that there's some hope. But the reason why I'm a little bit dubious of a James Cook, for instance, is that he is both small. So he's like the kind of player that doesn't traditionally get the workload. The indicators of him being the type of player that would do well in the workload aren't there. Like he's most efficient against lighter boxes. He's most efficient in the passing game. He's less efficient against heavier fronts. And then he never obviously got the workload. With Pierce, like he didn't get the workload, which is a little bit bizarre. But Javonte Williams never got the workload, and he's a top 5 dynasty running back. So I don't know that should stop us. Right. And then he at least like looks like and plays like the kind of running back who should get a workload. You know, like he's large. He is generally a guy who's able to churn out yardage. PFF, I think, had him as like their number one graded running back or something last year. Like he has the receiving chops as well. Like he looks like a guy who can do all the things. They chose not to let him, and maybe that's for a reason. But to me, like he's a better prospect, in my opinion, than Michael Carter and Trey Sermon were, quite frankly. And he's going at a much lower opportunity cost. Like he's going at a lower ADP in a far worse draft class. I've actually been drafting some Damian Pierce. I'm not too afraid to admit it.
So can I ask them, because I've been in a multiple drafts, and I know on this show we tend to ignore, like, well, in my league, this is what happened, because it's not really that important. But for me, being in, you know, 35 dynasty leagues like I am right now, I'm seeing a lot of either Algier or Pierce go at 201.
Oh my God, not in my leagues.
So I know. And
I wish, dude. I wish. Look, my league's fucking David Bell's going at the 110 and Wandell's going at the 2-2.
I know. I would
look at Desmond Ridder when I get to 210.
I am really happy that I'm just trading back from these
leagues. Where do you find these leagues? Why am I never invited to these leagues?
Because I don't join like leagues with the bulletproof nerd squad and all the extra sharps. I like
to
have
the right side for the nerd squad drafts. I get Damian Pierce at like 211 in those drafts, so it's pretty cool.
You gotta find leagues on Reddit that you can just win.
Oh my God, yes, that'd be so good. That's why I'm hashtag fake sharp on the show. I say it all the time. I just steal 90% of Jacob's work and call it and masquerade it as my own. But if you at gunpoint at 201, completely running back desperate, Algier or Pierce?
Algier. No, wait. No. I don't know why I said that. I would take Damian Pierce. I just like said the wrong name. Like,
are you okay?
I would go Damian Pierce. That was just, I don't know what happened.
There's a
the weed whacker
now.
Yeah, it's the weed. It might be the weed.
Let's talk about that. let's talk about that tier though. So we get through Pierce, we get through Spiller. And then this has been a decision that like, I have a preference, but my preference is usually the one who goes last. So I've started to have to rotate who I'm actually taking, because honestly, like it's hard to predict. Tyler Algier, Zamir White, Brian Robinson, Tyrion. These four tend to go in a row. And then I loop Keyonte Ingram in with that tier, but his ADP is a little bit further behind. Who's your preference there, and who's your biggest avoid? I'm curious if we have the same take.
I don't remember where I ranked these guys. I know
you're on the clock right now in a very high stakes league.
I find myself playing this game where like I prefer Keyonte Ingram out of all of these guys, but I don't have to take him here. Like I can wait around.
So take Ingram out because he goes a little later. Take Ingram out.
Okay.
Because I usually have like a lot of thirds because I love these running backs. So I'm always able to get Ingram a little later. So, like, we're talking, like, sort of the 212 through the 3-4, something like that. Algier, Zamir White, Brian Robinson, TDP.
I think the order I would go is Algier, Zamir White, TDP, Robinson.
Okay, give me the case for this, because I think I'm almost the exact opposite. I have Robinson first. Although I no longer take him first because I don't need to, because I think I have like 10 shares already. And then TDP, then Algier, and then I like Zamir White the least. But give me the take for especially Zamir White, because he's the one that I've been fading the most probably.
Yeah, I think Zamir White, the case is that he's just a good, steady runner. He's going to get what's blocked. And I think like they care about that. In Oakland, he went to Georgia. Like they're just so enamored with all the bullshit. And if Jacobs is, I think Zamir White is just a handcuff, really. And maybe he's the starter for like a year if Jacobs doesn't stick around. But I just think he's like a functionally good runner of the football. And
can he
yeah,
catch
there's,
passes?
And there's that.
Because that's why I'm out on
Zamir. I don't think so. Yeah, okay. And I guess the contrast there with somebody like Brian Robinson. Where Brian Robinson does catch passes would be, I just think Brian Robinson's ceiling is like TJ Yeldon. And even if he's more likely to be a thing in that capacity than Zamir White is to be a thing and sort of like an Alex Collins, you know, short-lived, you know, flame out type fantasy production role. I don't know that Brian Robinson at his TJ Yeldon peak is worth anything. Like, do I ever want that in my lineup?
So for me, yes. Like, I guess that's my okay. take. Like, I agree with you. I think Brian Robinson is TJ Yeldon. And to me, like, yeah, if I can have a guy who's just going to like exist in the league for 4 to 5 years and on several different occasions when whoever's ahead of him on the depth chart sprains an ankle, give me 2 to 3 weeks of 14 fantasy points. Like, to me, that's like a money third round pick.
I don't know if he would though with the guy like JD McKissick on the brand. And
right, that's like a 2022. Like, I'm just looking at like who these players are. Right. Like I'm looking at like with all these players, like it's hard for me to get too caught up in these situational factors when we're talking about like players that are have like an opportunity cost of very little and probably will never succeed. So to me, it's just, I look at like Brian Robinson's like, if fortune smiles on him, like, why does he have to come off the field? I'm like, I don't think he does. Like, I think that he's a guy who can like in a given week, he's the guy who is 4,500 at DFS and you do play in all your lineups because you'll just have 85% of the snaps. Like, to me, he can be a Jamal Williams, you know? And that's just more valuable to me. Algier, I think, is interesting. And like, I'll take Algier first because he goes first. And I do think there's a world where he's just the starter this year. But I guess where it comes down to is like, I don't know, he's a round five back. Like, to me, his staying power is zero. And then I look at like TDP and it's like, okay, in any other place, I wouldn't really be as interested because he's kind of similar to Zamir White to me, where it's like this guy that's just sort of a two down player. And that archetype doesn't interest me as much. But like in San Francisco, we've seen that the two down player can actually be a pretty high end RB2. So like with TDP, especially, it's like we fucking took Trey Sermon in the first round last year. We're not willing to take the third round San Francisco running back till the middle of the third round this year. Like,
I did not, sir. And I feel like with San Francisco, it's always just take the cheapest running back. And right now that's TDP. Well, I guess really that's Trey Sermon, but he's just more of a
could you imagine if this is the revenge of Trey Sermon?
that's what motivated him is TDP. I just feel like that's just going to be the like, I don't want to take Mitchell at his current cost. We're going to get into more vet backs when we get back. Look, we're going to take a quick second. We're going to play a clip from our last Full Tilt Dynasty show, which I actually think is relative to the conversation as it stands. And when we come back, we do a little ad read. We're getting into some vets that are being over and or under drafted. Sit tight. We're going to come back. Thanks. Stop fucking taking him at 106. Stop it. You're ruining this for me. Don't turn me against my favorite player. Stop it. Because
a strong 107.
I have him ranked at 201 in my rookie rankings, and that's me being all about it because 201 seems just fine for me. I am willing to say that 110 is like a reasonable, thoughtful place that if you really want a running back and you really think he's going to do it and you don't believe in like a Dotson or Christian Watson, sure, James Cook's a fine player and a good offense. Awesome. Stop it at 106. It's one of those things.
These leagues that you play in, like, do they give you 10 points per carry? Like, you always tell me the wildest stories about where these running backs go in your leagues. And like, I live on the other side of the universe. I intentionally tried to find leagues with like no one that's ever used Excel before for a couple of weeks just to like so that I could draft wide receivers again. And no, it didn't help. Like I went into the Film Bro community. We're still drafting wide receivers anywhere. Where do you find these people? Because every league that I'm in, it's like fucking 15 wide receivers. Deontay Johnson has gone at the 3-8 and Austin Eckler is chilling on the board. No one's ever looked at a running back. Zeke Elliott's going in round 11 of the startup.
Well, even look at our Devy draft, my first ever Devy draft, I was still getting Deontay Johnson at 4.7, 4.6. So, I mean,
yeah, that was actually a little bit pleasant. That was a little bit pleasant. Yeah, I enjoyed that one more.
It is happening.
I finally got to do a late. I think I only took like Etienne and Connor until like round like 14. That was pleasant. It was the first time I've not had to be like, fuck, it's round 7. And Nick Chubb's still
much,
here.
You're playing too much with guys like Cam or people who know that's all you're going to do. So they know they can adjust because you're the man to beat.
I haven't even, dude. Like I've held my nose and I've chubbed it up in round 7. I've done it. It doesn't feel good, but I do it. I go full chub.
You probably felt the start after. Well, one thing one thing we will be talking about, Jacob, even as of this weekend, as we get into the Full Tilt Best Ball and as in season, the DFS is Best Ball Mania 3. The best place to play fantasy football this summer is at Underdog. This show is, of course, as you can see by the little puppy down there in the corner, presented by Underdog. Their Best Ball Mania 3 tournament has $10 million in total prizes. And the best part is you just draft your fantasy football team. And you leave it alone. That's it. There's no waivers, no trades, no in-season management, none. So you can't be like me and just consistently play the wrong player every week and be left crying and standing at the altar. Underdog gives you the best score each week of the season, and the highest score at the end of the year wins. The champion of Best Ball Mania last year drafted in June. So there's no time like the present to join Underdog and take a shot at $1 million draft. Plus, Underdog is going to double your first deposit. Double it. That's free money. Up to $100 when you sign up with the promo code Full Tilt. That's four. Count them, four free entries to Best Ball Mania 3. So what are you waiting for? Head to UnderdogFantasy.com or the App Store. Sign up for Underdog with the promo code Full Tilt and draft your Best Ball Mania 3 team today. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code Full Tilt.
You're going to be such a great auctioneer one day, Tom.
That was a fantastic ad read. That was so good.
Our ad reads are so different. Like every once in a while, I'll text Tom. I'll be like, I want to do the ad read today. And it'll always be like, some party on the weekend, and I was thinking about Jameson Crowder, and like it'll be some bizarre anecdote. Whereas Tom's are so professional.
It's my radio background and pro wrestling promo cutting background that really helps me cut through those. No problem, Jacob. Look, the Celtics game, it's closing in on you. I see you all dressed up. We got time, I think, for one more of these two questions. So I'm gonna let you pick which one you want to ask here. We can close out with that.
I think we already talked like a lot of like Noah's process and work.
Yes.
You know, which we have a full Wikipedia page that one of our listeners could put together at this point. So let's pivot to vet running backs. Give us like one or two guys. I know you mentioned Montgomery earlier, but one or two guys that are like commonly taken like in that top 20, top 24 that you think are vastly overrated in Dynasty. And then of this like cavalcade of guys who cost not a whole lot, like who are the guys that you're actively going out and acquiring? Because certainly the biggest thing that bums me out reading a lot of your articles is you'll like show these charts of one of my favorite running backs, like a Pollard or a Khalil Herbert, and talking about how great they are. And then you're like, yeah, but I wouldn't actually buy them. So is there anyone you actually would buy in all of fantasy football? And then who are the top guys you'd be willing to sell?
Yeah, I'll go to sales first, or maybe it's just like fades at cost, but very.
Oh shit.
Are you good?
Sorry, that was how yeah. Loud was that? I bet pretty, huh?
Not louder than the weed whacker.
Yeah, I have my phone on my desk, like plugged into the charger, and then I hit it, and then it fell off pretty hard. Let me get reset up as you give this answer.
Okay. Yeah. The guys that I would be probably fading at cost, at least, are looking to sell. Christian McCaffrey is going anywhere from like RB3 to RB6 ish in Dynasty. And he's getting older. He has not stayed healthy for the last few seasons. It's just like becoming harder and harder to bet on him. And I understand the upside, like, especially in a redraft league. But, like, if you're taking him with your first round, your early second round pick in Dynasty, like, you've locked yourself into a win now approach. And you're no longer able to let the board fall to you. Like it, you just constrain yourself so hard in drafting Christian McCaffrey that high. I'm all for trading for him. If you're already in win now mode, I think that's appropriate, but I would not be taking him in startups as high as he's going. Javonte Williams, I feel like, is a little bit overrated. We're still drafting him as if Melvin Gordon left and Melvin Gordon didn't leave. He fell back a little bit. But he's still pretty high up there.
I think the issue is this tier sucks, dude. Like
it does. It does. Like, that's
problem. Like, you have to rank someone RB2, and like all the options seem obviously terrible.
Yeah, that is fair. I think I prefer Najee Harris and DeAndre Swift to both Christian McCaffrey and Javonte Williams. And yeah, I do think the argument that like this is just a bad tier, like a bad kind of mix of like age and unproven ability as far as the like running back landscape goes. But you also don't have to take a running back at like the 10.
Yeah,
you know, the 110.
I agree.
You can just opt to not take Javonte Williams there. But some other running backs that more like a soft sell for me would be Elijah Mitchell.
A few good songs back in the day.
Oh, God.
The band Soft Cell. Nobody's, no one.
Yeah, wow, I missed that one.
Just not landing.
Okay.
That and Canary in the Coal Mine. No, nothing's landing.
Yeah, I'd be selling Elijah Mitchell. I would be selling Miles Sanders. He's just like outside the top 24 running backs, but I don't think he's ever going to be much.
Just let him live. Let Miles Sanders be.
Like, what are we waiting for? Him to just get replaced next year? Like, so you threw your pick down the toilet? And then guys like J.K. Dobbins, I think he's on the Miles Sanders career path. He's never going to be what everybody wants him to be.
It's not his fault.
It might not be his fault, but it's just the way it's happening.
I know. Such sadness.
And then James Robinson. This is much later, but like, why are we drafting James Robinson as if he didn't just suffer an incredibly severe injury as an undrafted free agent running back who they just took another guy in the draft? Like, he might.
What's fascinating about Robinson, and this actually applies to Etienne and Akers and Dobbins too, is I think these guys are like way more reasonably priced when in like a trade market than, and harder to move, frankly, than in a startup. Because like in a startup, it takes one of 12 people to not give a fuck about injuries. For instance, like every time I'm in a startup, every time James Robinson comes off the board, I'm like, that's four rounds earlier than I would have put him in my queue. And then I've like traded for James Robinson for like a late third round pick.
From me.
So like, I think that Robinson's interesting where like, I think it's very easy that someone like had James Robinson, liked James Robinson, and then like he blew his Achilles. And now that person has like, is totally uncomfortable with the new risk profile and is willing to sell him to you for like a fairly reasonable cost. Versus in a startup, like all you need is one out of 12 people being like, I don't care about an Achilles. Is that important?
Yeah, that is true. I probably wouldn't even buy him for a third. I'd rather take a shot on Keonta Ingram or whoever else is available at that point in the draft than take the chance that James Robinson is going to be healthy and effective again. But
it's probably one of the grossest states of, like, I guess, dynasty rankings for running backs that I can remember in any recent memory. I mean, everyone's just waiting for 2023 at this point. One thing I find myself...
You hate all those guys.
I do not hate
do
all
like,
those.
Do you like any players, Noah? People have wondered. This is the most common question that I got.
It
I
is.
I asked people, I said, does anyone have questions for Noah? And they said, does he like any player in the NFL?
I love most players. Matt Kelly is the big, like, I don't hate players, I hate ADPs guy. I'm all aboard that train.
Do you like any ADPs?
I do like some ADPs.
Do you like any TDPs?
I do like TDPs. I think Leonard Fournette and Travis Etienne have great ADPs. Yeah.
Oh, my two favorite guys.
You mentioned that you don't think Leonard Fournette is good. I think he's at least an average running back. I would argue above average, given that he can play on all three downs.
Okay,
not,
he's average.
And not fuck things up.
Good.
But why is, like, what's the big difference between him and like the big tier of like Chubb, Cook, Kamara, Mixon? You don't have to take him up there, but like he could easily have the same end of career arc as all of those guys, and he's going significantly later.
That's one thing.
I feel like you just ripped off my tweet from yesterday, but yeah, absolutely.
One thing I was going to mention is Jacob, you and I actually talked about this. I think it was even a couple weeks ago. You and I went back in the Full Tilt chat about this kind of thing, and I came around on it. And now I can't seem to stop myself when somebody asks me, "Oh, I have Joe Mixon. What do I do with him?" And my answer has been, trade him for James Conner in a first. Trade him for Leonard Fournette in a first. Trade, because you're getting, you know, a replacement level player, and then you're just adding that asset on top. And I think it's a little crazy. So James Conner right now is the RB26, AJ Dillon RB25, Clyde Edwards-Helaire RB27. There's something about that.
Can we stop hilarious. Clyde? I'd like us to stop.
I know.
Clyde, but,
I think it's hilarious. But I think AJ Dillon, if you want to talk about guys at that range, right? So we're going to go David Montgomery at 19, Etienne at 20, Aaron Jones 21, Elijah Mitchell 22, Fournette 23, Elliott 24, and let's say Dillon and Connor to round it out. I think is AJ Dillon still your prime target there? Because he is for me. I just want to
talk about Angel. No, well, it depends on what you're doing. Like, I think all these running backs have different purposes on a roster. So, like, what I like about AJ Dillon is that compared to most running backs, like, he's actually like a really safe case for value accrual, which is why I've liked Pollard for all these years. In the sense, like, Aaron Jones is there because Aaron Jones is there. AJ Dillon isn't projected to be more than a flex play. And because of that, if he comes out and is just a flex play all year, like he's probably going to hold his value. And as long as he doesn't suffer a devastating injury and he still like performs efficiently and well, then people start talking about, oh my God, Aaron Jones is going to leave. And so it's like, to me, you're kind of just renting a free year of him. And then maybe Aaron Jones gets hurt and you get like a month of really high end production. So that's why like a Pollard or a Dylan is like pretty attractive to me, because barring an injury, and frankly, they play way less snaps, so they're less at risk of injury. You like get kind of the opportunity to sort of like rent them for a year, see if something happens, and then you can move them at the end of the year without like actually paying that much of a hold cost. But like in terms of production, like I don't think, you know, AJ Dillon's going to outscore Leonard Fournette this year. So yeah, I think it depends on what you're trying to accomplish at running back, I guess. And I think for me, like, yeah, I like Fournette and Connor and Aaron Jones because I don't think that they project super dissimilarly to Alvin Kamara, Dalvin Cook, Austin Eckler, Joe Mixon, Nick Chubb, et cetera, et cetera. And like, yeah, when you get an old running back, this was the tweet I had yesterday. It's like when you get an old running backs, like to me, like the idea of safety is like really out the window. Like you should not be rostering a 27-year-old running back being like, what's their value in 2024? Like their value in 2024 is somewhere between unknown and non-existent. I think you should be playing for now. And I think like the notion that the delta in Fournette versus like Eckler's staying power long-term, it just doesn't make any sense to me. So with all these guys, what I would do is I would play a high portfolio of best ball teams. I'd play a high portfolio of dynasty teams. And if you think that these guys have structural like factors weighing down their weighing down their value, like if you think the Fournette sucks, for instance, and you're just like, yeah, that's why I would rather pay up for Mixon, because I think Fournette sucks, like I would just still buy Fournette in dynasty where he's way cheaper, and then I would just fade him at his high ADP and redraft where he's going the same rate as all these other guys. Like, to me, that's just getting the most efficient price. So yeah, I agree with you on those guys for sure.
Do you have a take on that, Noah?
I am not as enthusiastic about the it's a fairly palatable price as far as like AJ Dillon and Tony Pollard goes. I just am not super optimistic about them having much more value than they currently have, unless Zeke or Aaron Jones get hurt. So there's like the flex play plus handcuff right. situation.
How
I just
do they
don't
lose
that
value? Right, that's my question. Like how do they lose value before free agency?
I don't know that they will ever lose value, because I think as far as like trade value, like perception based value goes, right. Because people are so bought into this idea that like we're just waiting for AJ Dillon and Tony Pollard to get their chance and like they're useful in the meantime. I just don't think that chance is really ever going to come to fruition outside of an injury. And so I don't think it's like, I think you're just punching a ticket that's like, it's going to return value, but I don't think it's going to increase in value.
Right. But I guess to me, it's like, in dynasty, like most assets decline. So if I can buy an asset that is going to hold and then might actually produce a lot of points in the case of injury, it's like, to me, it's like, why do I hold a draft pick? Because I don't want to store that in an asset that could lose value. To me, it's an asset. To me, like Pollard or Dylan is just like, it's a currency exchange. Like I'm basically holding them like a draft pick, but it's a draft pick that might score points for me if the guy in front of them gets hurt. And that's like really how I view those guys. Like why I like them is, to me, I think their value is really insulated. And I agree. Like I think that probably with these guys, like it's probably best if you sell these guys before the actual free agency hits, where the expectation might not become reality. But like, to me, I think there's just such a low risk in these guys losing value that if you just hold them from September through January, like, yes, it's the opportunity cost of an early second. I would rather have my early second be that guy where if the end of the year nothing happens, I just resell them back for that early second, but I'm renting the opportunity that you know, Zeke sprains an ankle and then I get 4 weeks of RB1 value. Like, to me, that's worth it.
Yeah, I think I could buy into that. It's just kind of like a, you know, buy to play and then sell. You just got to time it right. And I do think I'm a little bit more in on AJ Dillon in that case, just because he's not as far along in this sort of waiting process as Tony Pollard is. But yeah, I don't hate it.
Well, I think that's probably time. In the last 20 minutes, the Celtics game has gone from a healthy lead to close to now we're behind to now we're starting to catch up again. I'm probably going to watch the end of this, but this has been a blast.
Right. So with that, I just want to mention that one of the things we talked about on the draft show, which was so great, was a Full Tilt Dynasty podcast custom championship belt. That bad boy is right here. As I mentioned, I am a former pro wrestler. I am a 5-time tag team champion across the great country of Canada. I can tell you that the quality of this belt by Trophy Smack, I would not be able to tell you the difference between the championship belts that I have won in professional companies to this is no different. You can go to trophysmack.com right now. Use promo code Tipple. That's nipple with a T. Get yourself a championship belt or custom trophy. Use that promo code. Get yourself a free championship ring right there. It comes in this nice, neat box. And all you have to remember is nipple with a T. And you can get that. Guys, final thoughts. I want to start with you, Noah, before we get on out of here, where they can find you and what you're up to.
Where you can find me is the BDGE YouTube channel, Sundays and Wednesdays each week. Playerprofiler.com, I think, is where all my written content will be housed going forward. And then I have the Hero RB Show podcast on the Campus to Canton podcast feed that comes out every, I think it comes out every Thursday. So that's where you can find me, at No More Parties on Twitter. That's what I'm doing.
Absolutely phenomenal. Jacob, I know you're a busy man.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at FF_RTDB. You can find me in the Bulletproof Discord. I'm my channel there. You can find me, of course, Tuesdays here. You can find me Wednesdays on Dynasty Intervention with Chase and Shane. I will probably get back into the written content. I wrote two articles out to Camo last week. One was sort of my winners, losers from the draft, and I did it in a Dungeons & Dragons alignment chart because I felt like it. And then the other one was I wrote up six heuristics for your rookie draft. So general strategic principles, mostly devoid of player analysis in terms of how to attack rookie draft. So that's what I was up to. Probably most of my summer is going to be spent on running back research, frankly, leading up to my big fall project, which will be the running back streaming index. And basically, like, if you're playing zero RB or hero RB and you're treating RB2 as a streamable position like quarterback or tight end, how do you manage that throughout a season? So I'm going to be coming out with all these different archetypes for all the different backup and third string and satellite backs, how we get there, who to target in which formats and which rounds, depending on if you're doing basketball and half PPR, full PPR, redraft, FFPC, etc. That's like going to be my big summer research project is leading up to that. And all that'll be on Player Profiler.
Damn, that's a hell of a thing. And as for myself, you can find me there at the goingfor2.com Discord, as I'll have my channel there where I release, I've already released my rookie ranks, and I'm going through how to adjust my dynasty rosters to be a little bit more fluid. Of course, we are back for
another one
on Thursday with the Full Tilt Devi podcast. We, of course, have Alfred Fernandez coming back to talk about the volatility of drafting quarterbacks in Devi. Of course, we have JJ Zacharyson. He is coming by on the show June 7th to join us at the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast. You're not going to want to on that Saturday. We are also bringing back the, as I mentioned, the best ball show. Lots of great stuff coming Full Tilt Dynasty podcast. You can, of course, find all of our pods over there at the TrueNorthFantasyFootball.com. We're exclusively live streaming the Fantasy Walkabout over there. Triple Player, want to remind everyone to not be a piece of shit on the internet. Be kind to everyone. Check in on your loved ones because you never know when they need it. Remember that clear eyes and full hearts can never lose in your best days. Well, goddamn, they're always been tilted. Good night, everybody. Thanks, Noah. Thanks for hanging out with us.